You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Well, welcome to another installment here of the Neighborhood Archive podcast. I'm glad to have Eric back with me today. And we're going to take a look with the Christmas theme in mind, with Christmas upon us here later this week. We're going to take a look at the finer points of episode 1261 that comes from 1973. And this episode is available on Amazon to download, to purchase on there, I think, for just a couple of dollars. So if you've not seen this episode, I'd really encourage you to get on there, spend a couple of bucks, it's worth it. What I think we're going to do, though, is rather than just recap the episode and be done with it, I think we're going to just do a quick summary of what takes place in that episode, and then we can talk about, like I said, some of the finer points from that episode. So, Eric, I'll turn it over to you if you want to give just a quick synopsis of what takes place in this episode.
Okay, thanks, Tim. It starts out... You know, it's not labeled a Christmas episode or anything, so it just looks, it's got the normal opening, and Fred comes in with a fairly large box, cardboard box, and does the usual changing of the sweater and the sneakers and everything, and he shows us, sorry, I'm almost getting into too much detail, I'm going to try and summarize quicker. Anyway, he brings a Santa suit, and that kind of launches into discussions about Santa Claus and what different kids might think of Santa Claus. They go to Brockett's Bakery and a couple people are there, different neighbors, and they discuss Santa with them, and Chef Brockett tries on the suit. So when we get back to Fred's house and they go to Neighborhood of Make-Believe, when Santa shows there, it's obviously Chef Brockett dressed up, though they don't ever say that. They do almost hint at it, and we can talk about that later. But let's see. They then go back to Mr. Rogers' house, and Fred recaps, you know, the things they had talked about at Make-Believe. Elsie Neal comes over and teaches Fred how to make paper beards with some white paper, and so their little craft project. And let's see, Fred sings the song. I think it's, I just call it Pretending.
Right.
And then he pretty much wraps it up. He kind of hints that there's got to be more about the beards or Santa Claus tomorrow. Then that's it. He says goodbye.
Well, so essentially what we've got here is like, you know, like you said, Eric, it's not a Christmas episode. It's not labeled or titled anything related to Christmas. But if there is such a thing as an episode, a Christmas episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood that's readily available right now for people to watch, this would certainly be the one. Just as the whole thing from start to end is about basically the idea of Santa Claus, which I guess I should throw out, if there happened to be anybody listening with kids in the room, I'm sure some of the topics that we bring up may not, I guess, will be a little Santa sensitive. So if there's any young ears that you know, any listeners may not want to hear some comments about Santa Claus, that may be a good idea to not listen to this with young kids in the room, just in case. Just wanted to throw it out there. Didn't want to spoil anybody's Christmas or anything by any means. So I guess topic wise, you know, one of the things that I really picked up from this episode that I thought was pretty interesting, that one of the first things, I guess, was the fact that it seems the whole idea of having Santa Claus in the Neighborhood of Make-Believe, like, you know, like you said, they never really come right out and say that Santa Claus is just Chef Brockett dressed up, you know, as Santa Claus in a Santa Claus suit, which to me is kind of, I guess, somewhat contradictory to the idea that came up in the Big Bird episode, to where I guess Fred Rogers was very adamant about Big Bird only being in the Neighborhood of Make-Believe because he wanted there to be a clear distinction between reality and make-believe. But, you know, the more I think about it, though, I guess Santa Claus himself, I guess, only appeared in the Neighborhood of Make-Believe in this episode. So that does make sense now that I think about it.
It kind of follows the rules still. What I noticed And you know, half the time I've got an episode of Mr. Rogers going on in the background while I do other things, and I don't watch as closely because I've seen so many of them. Mm-hmm. But watching this one real closely, there's a scene where Chef Rocket is talking to Corny, and Betty Aberlin is there on the sidelines. And Corny is the only one in make-believe who really mentions, he says, you know, you kind of look like Chef Rocket. In fact, you kind of sound like him. Mm-hmm. And there's like a moment between Betty and Santa Claus where they're kind of trying to stifle a laugh between mm-hmm. each other. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, well, should we tell him the secret or not? And I think of it as like two adults doing the same thing with a kid in the room. You know, they don't want to spoil the magic, but the kid's practically figured it out for himself, you
right.
know?
Right.
Which I was surprised at, because having watched it, you know, prior, I didn't think it ever came out what the secret was. It was always, no, this is just Santa Claus. And Chef Rocket, or Santa Claus, gives a very strange explanation in my mind for why he sounds like Chef Rocket. Mm-hmm. It explains it, but it really, I think it almost, they talk so much about Santa Claus being scary to some kids, and his explanation almost makes it sound scarier right. to me.
Right, that's one of the things I noted as well, was that explanation, because from the perspective of a kid, you know, who obviously Santa looks different at the mall than he does at his school, at, you know, versus, you know, wherever else in a storybook, Santa's always look and sound differently. And from a kid's perspective, the explanation provided by Chef Brockett, I thought was decent, but exactly what you're saying, to where if they're trying to eliminate any fear or creepiness that comes with Santa Claus, you know, the explanation, I don't think did that great of a job.
Yeah. There's to explain a little further in case somebody hasn't seen this. They go a long way to assure kids that Santa's not quite as magical as you've heard. He can't see you when you're sleeping, and he's not all knowing, you know, and he has that discussion with Daniel.
Which I think is great. For the record, I think that aspect of it is fantastic, because, you know, the idea of, you know, this all-knowing being, like, watching your every move, that can be a little creepy, you know, but I think that explanation that you've described up to that point, I think that's great.
Right. So they made him sound fairly, like a fairly normal person, until he's talking to Corny, and his explanation to Corny for why he sounds like Chef Brockett is, well, he says Santa Claus can look like anybody and can sound like anybody, and then the reverse is true too, that anybody can sound and look like Santa, which I understand what they're saying as an adult, but if you just look at the surface of the words, it's almost sounding like, actually, you know, Santa can make himself look like anyone and go walking down the street and you'd never know he was there, or
right,
something
right,
like
right.
He's got some sort of weird transforming ability.
You know? You know, and maybe looking at it from the adult perspective too, maybe, you know, I'd like to think that maybe we're looking at it a little more deeply than what the average, you know, 3 to 5 year old kid watching the show is going to think, to where we may think that sounds a little creepy, but at the same time, you know, a 3, 4, 5 year old watching it may not.
Right. And I don't ever remember as a kid noticing that, you know, the mall Santa I saw this year was different looking than the mall Santa
right.
I saw last year.
Right. Santa Claus is Santa Claus until you hit a certain age, I think.
Maybe, yeah. Or, yeah. I was probably so scared I didn't notice.
What are some other things that stuck out to you in this episode?
I'm sure this plot line went many weeks later, but they, when Fred gets to the bakery to have Chef Rocket try on the Santa suit, he finds out they're expanding and adding a soda shop to the bakery, which I remember people sitting around the bakery as if it was a soda shop. I just don't right. ever remember it being referred to like that.
Yeah, I guess I never realized, or I had forgotten, that this episode, I guess, was kind of the starting point of that whole storyline.
Yeah. So that was interesting. I always like when they have storylines outside of Fred's house beyond, we're just going to visit somebody.
Right.
You know, the little things that show that his neighborhood is active, you know. When he goes and visits Daniel in the first place, Daniel is like terrified as soon as Betty Aberlin says that Santa Claus is coming. And I like his comment, it's She says Santa Claus is coming as if it's a great surprise, and Daniel says, "What's he going to do to us?" I mean, I'm sure there were kids who were that terrified,
right?
But it's Daniel's doesn't do much to hide his fears.
Somebody makes a comment. Let me go back and look at this real quick. Where somebody says something about peace in reality. Who was that?
Yeah, well, Betty Aberlin says, or Lady Aberlin, I should say, comes over to Daniel and she says, "Oh, I've got a great surprise for you." And his first guess is they've declared peace in reality,
right?
And she says no, and it's funny. She, I don't know what reaction I expected from her. I almost expected her like, "Oh no, this surprise is going to be is going to be disappointing to him if that's what he wanted." But she doesn't. She just moves on and tells him about Santa Claus.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting just a quick one line that to stick in there, because you know, just that there's peace in reality, you know, because number one, yeah, that, you know, just it's kind of I wouldn't say an awkward line to stick in. It just doesn't really seem to fit the whole storyline that they've got at hand, but even more so, I think the interesting part there to me was the fact that that's one of the few times that you hear someone in the neighborhood of make-believe make a clear distinction between, you know, the difference between neighborhood of make-believe and the real neighborhood.
Yeah. And, you know, I, not having seen any full episodes of the Children's Corner, that reminds me of the Daniel that I've seen in a few clips of the Children's Corner, mm-hmm, where it almost does sound like an ad-lib line. And it's funny, you know, mm-hmm, because it's not expected. But you hear how Fred was such a stickler for sticking to the script and, you know, the carefully worked out, not agenda or master plan, but curriculum, I guess.
Right.
Even probably not so much in the early years, but you know, that I'm sure once a script was figured out, they stuck to it, unless along the way they decided something needed tweaking. But I don't picture him throwing lines in haphazardly, but that almost sounds like an ad lib line, yeah. And it works fine.
The two things, I guess, not the two things, but one of the other things that really I really enjoyed about this episode were the choice of songs. The fact that outside of obviously the intro song and the departure song there, you know, that we're used to hearing on every episode, the fact that he chose very obviously very specifically to use "Good People Sometimes Do Bad Things" and "Pretending," both of those that go hand in hand, I think, with the topic, because especially the first one I appreciate more so even than the "Pretending" song. But the, you know, the fact that he's trying to drive home the point that everybody tells you, you know, Santa Claus isn't going to visit, Santa Claus won't bring you presents unless you're a good boy or a good girl. And mm-hmm, I think that's, I mean, a legitimate fear in a lot of kids' minds, you know, to where it kind of makes them somewhat paranoid, to where I almost wonder if it does a little bit to their self-worth here and there, you know, just
yeah,
because everybody messes up. Everybody, you know, does bad things occasionally, just as the song says, you know. And I think it was really a good move on the part of those who pieced this episode together, you know, to use that song especially to drive home that point that, you know, even if you do mess up, you know, that's not the end of the world. You're still a good person. You know, I really, I don't know, I thought that was a great fit for this episode.
Yeah, and that song seems to really be used a lot in that era, it sounds like. What was the, was it used in an opera?
Let's take a look.
Oh, yes, it's the Snow People opera. Is very much centered around that song. And how you know, Betty Aberlin,
oh, right,
was kind of malicious in the episode, and mm-hmm, but it was just that she was, you know, she was angry and she did these bad things, and that the whole lesson is, well, yeah, sometimes good people do bad things, and that you don't, and like they're saying in this episode, you're not a bad kid, you're just a good kid who did bad things, you know. And I don't remember as a kid ever being told, you know, being labeled a bad child by anybody, even in, you know, my parents in a moment of anger or anything. But I have heard, you know, you're at the mall or something and you'll hear a parent who probably should have their license taken away, tell a third party, like a cashier, that their child is a bad kid. They'll mm-hmm. say, you know, the kid's crying in the cart, and the parent says to the cashier, oh, just don't pay attention to her. She's a bad girl. And it sounds really harsh, mm-hmm. you know. And it gets, I think more people use the term casually, saying, don't be a bad boy or don't be a bad girl. And I don't know if that harms kids, but man, having heard parents tell their kids or tell a third party that their kids were bad, mm-hmm. it really sounded damaging, you know. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what Fred was addressing specifically, was like, hey, if you ever get called this, just remember, you know, you might have done something bad, you're not a bad person,
right.
Which I guess is really valuable. I just had never even realized it was an issue before.
Well, what are some other things that you'd like to touch on from the episode?
I'm afraid I don't have anything nearly as deep as you brought up. I have little notes like, when Lady Aberlin takes Chef Brockett over to the factory, he's there in the neighborhood of make-believe to talk to Corny, and he wants Corny to make him some rocking chairs that he's going to use as presents. But I was laughing. There was she takes him up to the factory and says, "Oh, he might be in the basement." And there's, you know, three windows. They almost just look like display windows below the part of the factory that Corny the puppet would appear in.
Right.
And she like leans over to two of them and yells, "Corny," as if the sound's going down deep into the bowels of the factory there. Oh, and you know, I'm going to send you, did you notice the big green hill with the water mill, with the water wheel on it that's next to the factory?
I guess not.
I have never seen this before. I'm sure it was probably in early episodes. I'm going to send you a screen cap that I grabbed of it. But it's like a whole geographical feature that I didn't even know was there.
Hmm.
It kind of comes between that, you know, the trolley tunnel that's on the right of the... let's see if I can find it now.
That's right. I'm trying to find it here, too. Is it on the left-hand side of the factory?
Yeah. It almost looks like it kind of melds into the wall and you know, forms the other side of that path into the tunnel.
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, and I guess a water wheel makes sense, you know, although his factory is very modern. But, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Hmm. I didn't catch it until an odd shot that I want to say was shot from like near the tree of the factory. And then I went back and looked at previous shots and it was there the whole time. I just hadn't caught it. Makes me wonder how many little bits of make-believe had been around in earlier sets that got removed, you know, not mm-hmm. not like the fountain where the frogs lived or things like that, but little add-on pieces that maybe made it look a little more landscaped and realistic, but over time, either they didn't have time to store it, or they didn't, or it got damaged in storage, and they just didn't bring it back, you know. But that looked like one of them.
Hmm.
And I wonder if it served some technical function too. If it was hiding equipment, or if you know, if it helped hide Fred moving from the factory to some place, or
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never noticed that before.
Yeah. Anyway, a little piece of lost. Lost make-believe there.
Well, anything else that you want to include here?
Let's see. Oh, yeah, so Fred says, he says it once at the bakery, and then he says it, I think it's in the recap of make-believe. Or actually, they all kind of talk about it at the bakery. Let's see, Francois Clemens, who's there, says... that he used to be somebody who thought, I think he says he was nervous about Santa. He thought, you know, Santa could see what he was doing all the time. Everybody gives what their childhood impression was of Santa. Mm-hmm. Betty Aberlin says she used to be scared of Santa, or she never says scared of Santa. She used to be scared of seeing someone dressed as Santa, which very clearly makes the point that it was just somebody dressed up.
Right, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. Let's see, Mrs. Shank says that in her country, she kind of says that it's summertime when we're having Christmas, when December rolls around. And so you'd never see someone dressed in a typical Santa suit there because it would just be too hot. So Fred chimes in, and his phrasing, I think, is very deliberate. But he says some kids don't have Santa in their lives at all. Mm-hmm. And he, either at that point or later at the recap, he says, you know, they don't think about Santa Claus and they don't talk about Santa Claus. Which I think he's trying to say, no, it's not that Santa doesn't come to them. It's that there's no awareness of the concept, mm-hmm. you know? And, initially I think of this, it almost sounds, you know, like with Fred's religious background, a cynical part of me, if I was someone else, would say it almost sounds like a recruitment pitch, you know, like be sure you go out and tell all your friends about Santa because everybody needs to know about him, you know.
Right.
But I know that's not how Fred was. And it's more just, it's almost just like making kids aware, you know, there are other cultures out there. There are other, not even religions necessarily, just mm-hmm. cultures. And maybe even if they do celebrate Christmas, they don't include our same traditions.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You know, because I mean, it could be a matter of, you know, the kids that they're going to school with or their friends they're playing with, you know, they may not have those same, you know, like you said, they may be celebrating Christmas just the same as everybody else, but they may not, their parents may not use Santa Claus as part of that celebration.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
You know, it could be that perspective of it versus, you know, versus even just the, you know, the cultural aspect or the, you know, even it may even be kind of an all-encompassing comment, you know, to where it's both of those. It's, you know, possibly other children who whose families financially can't provide a Santa Claus, really a Santa Claus option, for lack of a better description. You know, to where, you know, there's always going to be other kids, whether you believe in Santa Claus and Santa Claus comes to your house. That's not the case for everyone. I think that's kind of an all-encompassing comment to support any one of those situations.
Yeah. I've talked about this before. I think I just commented on the forum at one point about why I thought this episode happened when it did, which I think you said was June or July, right?
Actually, I think it came in like February or March, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah. So
but
I
even
wonder,
so,
what do you think the reason is that it was done so far away from Christmas?
I have no idea. be honest with you, I really don't. I don't know if maybe it had to do with, you know, something as simple as like production times and things like that. You know, and you know, it's just a matter of when they filmed it and when a new episode was needed for broadcast, or if it was deliberately done outside of the Christmas season. And quite honestly, I'm not sure. I initially I was kind of surprised that it wasn't aired originally right around the Christmas season, because you would think that would be the time that kids are talking about and thinking about Santa Claus.
Yeah. My theory my best guess was just that I wonder if Fred expected maybe a little bit of concern from parents who would say, hey, now wait a second, I'm not ready to tell my kid all this.
Mm.
You know, what have you done? If this had happened, if this episode had been aired the week before Christmas,
right.
That might have caused a little more trouble than if there was some distance and time to discuss the things, you know, if it happened middle of the year.
Mm-hmm. But I think this episode does a good job of making the point that Santa Claus isn't as real as, you know, I guess as some kids like to think that he is, but it does a good job of making that point, but it also does a good job of not coming right out and saying it. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, it's
not a spoiler, you know, it's not a spoiler for kids that still believe, but at the same time, it's food for thought for kids who are starting to wonder, or kids who are old enough to be thinking that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and the only other thing I noticed in this one that kind of amuses me as an adult is, off the topic of Santa even, but when Fred first brings the costume out, he puts it on and he's just marveling at how big it is. He goes, oh my gosh,
right.
I can't you know, this, these pants are huge, and even the hat comes down over his eyes, you know, and he goes, now who do we know who is bigger and could fit into this well? Mm-hmm. And they land on Chef Brockett, and Chef Brockett fills it out well, and they compliment him on how well he looks in it, you know.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, when he was trying on the suit at his house, how he almost came across as, like, frustrated like you would expect a kid to get frustrated. You know what I mean? Like, you almost, like, the frustration isn't the typical personality you would expect to see from Mr. Rogers on TV. Like, you almost expect him anytime to stomp his foot and, you know, yeah, and storm out of the room like a frustrated child, just the way he kind of presented that part of the episode.
That's funny, because he does that, for the most part, he does play a responsible adult, you know? And they always say how he wasn't acting, you know, that was him. But he does very well usually model that adult behavior, and even in times of frustration, you know, you don't have to lose control on everything. And I assume that the times he doesn't do that are very intentional, because there's there's the episode, well, I forget the topic of the week, but where he was trying to make the rainbow, you know, and really lost his temper about, he had a prism and a flashlight, couldn't make a rainbow. And he was mad for a lot of that episode, about as mad as you ever saw him on screen, you know. But the whole point was, if you can't do something, you get someone to help you, and well, I guess that's not the point of him getting mad. But anyway, it served a purpose. And yeah, it's funny, here it doesn't quite serve that purpose. He just genuinely plays angry.
He just gets frustrated. Yeah.
And maybe that was just to, you know, because I'm sure he knew kids would be frustrated by something like that. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with him showing that.
Right.
But
right,
yeah, but he's certainly not being the in-control adult.
Right. So it was almost humorous just how, you know, like I said, any moment you expect him just to stomp his foot and, you know, storm out of the room or something like, you know, I would expect my daughter to do.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and then when he and Francois Clemens walk back, and they stop in front of Francois's studio there, right next to the Bob Baker marionettes, which I'm hoping they release all that on Amazon eventually. But anyway, and Fred says again, you know, I put that costume on and it was just way too big and the pants were out here. And Francois Clemens has the same tactful way of saying it and says, you know, well, you know, Don's got a bigger frame than you. And he says, but you know, there's some things that you could wear and look very nice in that he couldn't wear, you know. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was an interesting way to address that. It was almost something that didn't need to be said, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fred could have come in and just said, I've got this costume that I want Chef Brockett to wear, you know, and not explained why he wasn't wearing it himself. But it's interesting that they even approached it.
Yeah, and you know, kind of along those same lines, the one other thing, the one last thing, I guess, that stood out to me kind of goes right along with what you just said, where it seems like in this episode there was a lot of, now this is outside of the neighborhood of make-believe sections, but it seems like in the rest of the episode there was a lot of downtime. And by downtime, I don't mean just sitting there, you know, doing nothing, but it seems like, and again, I think this was completely deliberate. For example, like when Chef Brockett is putting on this costume, I think most shows, for the sake of a kid's, you know, the average child's attention span, is going to show him, you know, putting on maybe the coat, and then it's going to cut to him being fully dressed in the suit after just a few seconds. But we spend, you know, the entire time he's putting on this outfit, we sit here and we watch him just get dressed. You know, but meanwhile they're yelling from the front of the bakery and they're talking back and forth, just trying to. It's almost like it's buying time. You know, like, okay, let's hurry up and get him in this suit. But again, I think that was deliberate. I think because it shows kids that this is someone putting on a costume.
Yeah. And yeah, it's fairly entertaining the way it's done with.
Sure.
You hear from the other room that Francois Clemens has come in, and Chef Brockett kind of, you know, says, okay, well, show him some of the nice cakes. And he's really stalling him off, and it's done very well. You can tell, I guess, Don Brockett specifically was, you know, a comedian on his own. Mm-hmm. And you can tell he has that skill, and he's not just reading, you know, nervously reading lines that he was given.
Right. But even so, you know, I think in comparison to other children's shows, even from that time, I think that, it would have quickly cut to something else, or, you know, they wouldn't have sat there with the camera on this guy while he put on every last piece of that suit.
Sure.
And so, you know, again, although, I think that was very, very deliberately done.
Yeah, although I wonder, too, if that was part of the point of, we can't just show Chef Rocket getting the costume and then emerging as Santa. We have to show him putting it on.
Right, that's what I'm saying, to where it very clearly shows it's him putting on a costume.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, with that, let's wrap this up, and hopefully this has been a good Christmas treat, I guess, as we haven't done a podcast in quite some time, and it was definitely long overdue to get together and put a good one together and get one out there. So with that, let me say on behalf of myself and Eric and the Neighborhood Archive in general, wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday Season.